is like the most hated Super Bowl ever by all of men. Like, men hate this Super Bowl.
Dude, we all want a Detroit. We all want a Baltimore. Like Lamar Jackson, bud, I get it. You're a great quarterback, but you are not clutch. You're not clutch. Okay? Just you're not. Like, you're not a Super Bowl quarterback. You're an awesome quarterback for the regular season. You are not a Super Bowl quarterback. He's not clutch, right?
No.
So, but again, back to, here's the thing.
All right, Matt. So I think we're making a tradition of this, dude. We've got another 52-week high, another new all-time high. Like, every time we chat, intraday highs, dude.
Look at charts. I'm going to talk, we have a new high. It's funny, is that time we talked at the end of October, that was the closing low of that 90-day correction cycle. That basically started August 1st and went through, and the closing low was at 41.17 on October 27, almost exactly 90 days. And here we are. Last time we talked, we mentioned right here on the show, this is an official breakout to new highs, new all-time highs. It happened that day. It was happening due to obviously yields cooling off and good CPI data, and the market then pricing in a more dovish Fed, a more accommodative Fed, a little sooner than probably what we're actually going to get, right? But the market, as it does, gets ahead of itself. So, and that's okay. So sort of what got us to where we are and what sort of happened this week, we had good CPI. We had good PPI. We had really good PPI, actually, which is the producer price index. Okay. And when we have producer price index colder than consumer price index, the producer price leads the CPI by about 3 months. But what it does is also provides margin. It lets us know. So if wholesale prices are coming down faster and further than consumer prices are coming down, that's companies building in margin. And here's the thing. It's the secret that we all know. Companies, if their prices go down, call it 5%, consumer prices won't go down at all, or they might go down 1% or 2%. They're always going to try to grab margin when they can, because they know on the other end, there's going to be wage increases, regulatory costs, things like that, that will increase. It's going to eat that margin back up. So that's why they did it. So seeing this good PPI data, right, right after we got the good CPI data, was positive for earnings and positive for inflation. So the market, had a good week. Monday, Tuesday this week was pretty good. I think the market really thought that Jay Powell was going to go up there and, really put on the white dove suit and fly away. He did nothing of the sort. He got up there and he did mention that they're going to begin actively discussing, or they're now actively discussing when the first reduction of policy rate will begin. That's the first time he said that. They actually added that to the press conference. But he did, and you saw the market was doing well. It was doing well. And then he said it. They asked him, what about March? Are there cuts being talked about and debated for the March meeting, March 20th? And he responded in perfect classic Jay Powell way. He said, well, I don't think that the committee believes they'll have enough confidence in inflation to that we would support, that the committee would support a policy cut on that at that meeting. And you just watched the market just, right? It was just crash and burn. It was like the fuel came out of the airplane and the wings fell off at the same time. It was like, here we go. And exactly what you thought would happen. Then yesterday.
I love to watch the charts, by the way, when that happens, right? So it's so cool to see, like, most of the charts are like, but then you get a moment like that and it's just like this gigantic gap.
Draw a line right in that chart. Here's where he said it. And it's like, you know,
I love going back and rewinding the tape.
It's so dumb, right? It's so dumb. Does it really matter if they cut 25 basis points in March or May or June? No, it's not going to affect the earnings of Microsoft and Meta and, I mean, those guys, and Amazon and Caterpillar and Costco. Of course, that's not going to affect any of those earnings. It's not going to affect anything really. We know rates are coming. Okay. We know rate cuts are coming. As far as how fast they come and when they begin, it's probably going to be May or June. Okay. The fact that it's not March, does that really matter? No. So what you got, I think we got some machine trading yesterday, some angry machines. And it just, they just started selling when they started reading the words out of the press conference. So, you know,
kind of to your point there, I mean, correct me if I'm maybe saying this wrong, but whether it's a quarter of a point in March versus June versus whenever, the probabilities of all of those possible things occurring have already been priced into the market, right, and absorbed into the market. So whether if one happens versus the other, it's already kind of priced into economic models to some extent. It's going to end up being sort of space. It's going to end up being spread out over the same time horizon, right? So that it's a big difference maybe for now, the next, you know, for the next year, for 2024. Let me make sure I say this right. For 2024, yes, March versus June is a, you know, 33% difference, but over the next 5 years, it's not that big of a deal.
Doesn't matter at all. Doesn't matter at all. So it depends on your time horizon. If you're a day trader and you look at the hourly charts, the 15-minute charts, it probably does. But for us, you know, we take positions typically for a minimum of a year, but normally 2 to 4 to 5, whatever, right? So does that 25 basis point cut in March, will that equate to a difference in policy rate at the end of the year? Probably not. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's really not going to matter. It's really not going to matter because the policy rate at the end of the year is going to be the same. Now, then you get into the discount. This is where people are going to start shutting off their Spotify. But when you start looking at the discount rate, okay, the discount rate is very simple. So if we look at earnings growth and we look at returns based on earnings growth, you have to discount that backwards based on a risk-free rate, right? If the risk-free rate is 2%, well, then okay, right? That discount, you're only discounting it back 2%. You're discounting the earnings of a given company back 2% a year, okay? Which means the competition that the equities have against the risk-free side or general bonds goes down. And that will generally be good for the broader market, not just the superstars, okay? So that's why I think this year, the equal weighted index will probably outperform the cap weighted index, not by much, but what we've seen over the last 20 years, it's 50-50, right? Is 50% of the time the cap weighted index wins, 50% of the time the equal weight outperforms. And the equal weight has underperformed the cap weighted for the last 3 years straight. And last year it underperformed by like 18% or something terrible. So we think it's going to be playing catch up. We're seeing PMIs, which is the purchasing managers index, that's turned and now going positive. So when you see that, that's when earnings really start to accelerate across the board broadly in the S&P 500. Again, more supportive of the equal weight kind of broad market participation this year. Don't get me wrong, I think your superstars are going to continue to be the superstars. I think this is kind of a golden time because we have great demand. I mean, you saw the jobs number today. Here we are, February 2nd. January payroll data came out, 336,000 for the month. Okay. Mm-hmm. On a consensus of 176,000. Okay. Moreover, the December jobs number was revised up 117,000. Okay. So obviously bonds sold off a little bit today. But here we are, we have policy rate at 5.5%, 5.5%. And we still have this strong of a labor market. This is a good economy. I'm not getting anybody's politics here, but the demographics are so strong and the products are so good. And the US has been so great at innovating these last 20, 30 years. People want these products. And these companies that are providing these products, they know what they're doing. So I really like this year. I like the back half of this year better than I like the front half this year. Okay. But I really like next year too. So, and I think I think what we're going to see is we're going to see the Federal Reserve and the people that work there, in addition to the governors, right? But the actual analysts there and then the economists there, they're smart people. They understand that interest rates are going up now. Even though interest rates are actually going up on an absolute basis, they're falling. Okay. When you look at policy rate, inflation is going down. So when inflation goes down and policy rate is held steady, that increases the effective interest rate. Okay. So that's the real interest rate. There's nominal and there's real. Okay. So the nominal is 5.5. The real interest rate is 5.5 minus CPI. So, or PCE. So if you look at PCE a year ago when it was four, we only had about 1.5% for sure. Well, at the time we weren't 5.5. So we had almost even money as far as policy rate and inflation was concerned. Now, with the new PCE number that just came out last week at 0.17, we're sitting just under 2% on a 7-month. So the last 7 months annualized out is right just a touch under 2%. So we're sitting at 3.5% real interest rates now. That's again pretty restrictive. So the Fed's aware of these things. Okay. So I think the Fed is going to start, there's going to be a couple of communication meetings, right? There's going to be a couple of communication meetings. I think this was the first one. There'll probably be another one in March, maybe May, where they're going to transition into this more dovish type tone and accommodative tone. I disagree with that. Okay. If I was Jay Powell or I'm sitting on the board, I would be pounding on the table right now saying, "You eggheads, we don't need to take this. We don't need to walk up to a burning building every time here. We don't need to have, PCE annualized out at, 0.3% before we do anything. Okay, let's start early and go slower. Okay, because they can always move it the other way, right?
Yeah.
They should. I think they should have started this meeting, gone 25, maybe skip March, gone 25, and kind of see what happens." On the fixed income markets and see what happens in the mortgage markets, okay, and see if we started to see inflation, the leading indicators of inflation, if we started to see some of those food, transports, whatever, okay, if we started to see that move, and if we see that move, okay, we're gonna hold steady, and then so it's more of a balancing, it's a delicate balancing act rather than how they've decided to do it, which is. Inflation's transitory, inflation's transitory, inflation's transitory. Now we're at 8% or 7.5% inflation, and I think we're going to start raising rates. Okay. And we are committed to lowering inflation. We are committed to lowering inflation until the economy is effectively looks like Hiroshima in 1945. Oh, now we're going to cut rates. Like, dude, there's a middle ground here. Just start earlier and go a little slower and see what happens. It's like dating. You don't want the girl that does everything the first time. You want the chick that's like kind of just lets you just, have a little fun and you like hanging out with her and she likes hanging out with you and you keep that anticipation going. And the better you get to know each other, the better things get. And then you see, well, hey, maybe this didn't work out. I didn't know her breath smelled like, rancid broccoli. I'm not going to get close to her again. That's what they should be doing, but they're not. They're taking this thing to the very end, and then they're going to start cutting rates faster. That's my opinion.
There's so much valuable wisdom in that analogy, Matt. I mean, like that's so poetic and beautiful. And right, just in time for Valentine's Day, you're coming up in 2 weeks. Like you're a romantic there behind the scenes. You just
My wife would disagree.
I think that's a great point though, because I think just like in life, like okay, with dating, come on now, we all know that the safer, more conservative way to play there is probably going to be a better long-term decision, right? That's going to lend itself to better longer-term outcomes. However, you know how we're all wired too, and in the chase of that short-term, what we're whatever we're looking for, that short-term euphoria, we do kind of disregard long-term logic. I think there's some of that that's absolutely true in the way we do this with the economy, especially with politicians and with things like that, because they kind of have a 4-year contract, right? I mean, like all of them to some extent. I know there's, 2 years, 6 years, 4 years, there's different things, but they're all at the end of the day, they have somebody to please to keep them in that role,
Of course,
right?
of course, of
So,
course.
how much does the tail wag the dog there? But more importantly, as an investor, it doesn't matter if you agree with it, like it, don't like it, whatever. You just have to be able to anticipate it.
Right, and there you go, and that gets into your time horizon, right? If you're a day trader or a short-term investor, yeah, you're these things are going to affect you, and you're going to act on these, right? And maybe you see these as opportunities. I don't know, right? But back to the rate cut situation, they need to, as we were putting it, they need to start dating rate cuts. They don't need to marry it.
Yeah.
We're going to reduce policy rate. We're going to begin a policy rate reduction cycle. How do you know you're going to do that? You say in every meeting, they say in every meeting that, economic data is very difficult to forecast. And, to get it right is almost impossible. So to say we're going to begin a policy rate cycle, a rate reduction cycle, knowing that the economic data may come in not supportive of policy rate cuts, okay, why then communicate that? Why not say, hey, we've got 7 good solid months here. We're the real interest rate sitting at, whatever, 3.5% is a little rough. We're going to start reducing and see how it goes. Okay. But, no one cares what I think. And trust me, Jay Powell would not care what I have to say, nor probably should he. So, but again, to the market, does it really matter? No, because the market's going to do what the market's going to do. And the market is right, whether you agree with it or you don't agree with it. Whether, oh, the market got this wrong or the market got this right. No, it got it right on that day and it got it right on this day and it got it right on that day. It was doing different things, but that's what it decided that day. It's like your dad when you're 7 years old. It's because I said so. Well, okay. Well, the market got this wrong. No, it didn't. Why not? Well, because the market said so.
That's
Period.
right.
So,
Well, we said something to that tune on the last show, I think, right? Like it doesn't the market, something's worth what somebody's willing to pay for it,
right.
right? You don't have to agree with that price. The
No,
market didn't ask you. Well, the market may have asked you, but it spoke louder than you did.
exactly. And the market spoke really clearly on Wednesday on the fixed income side in the Treasury markets when Jay Powell made that announcement. So if you look at the shorter end of the curve, the shorter end of the belly, that the 1 to 3 particularly the 3 to 7, that actually sold off that day because then the shorter end of the shorter end of the curve, that part of the market said, no, we're selling that off. Obviously, we got a little ahead of the game. But the longer end, the 10s and the 20s rallied. They did well. So it was really interesting to watch the Treasury markets bifurcate themselves. They don't move as a monolith. They don't. A lot of people think they do, they don't. But to see the separate ends of the curve move different ways based on, okay, clearly the shorter end got a little too happy. The longer end rallied because, oh, you know what? That may actually lead to a little slower economy a little further down the road than we think. So we're going to start, that's going to be a good thing for those longer duration rallies, those longer duration treasuries. And that's what happened. So I actually, once he said that, I'm like, okay, that's probably what will happen. And it did happen. And then seeing what happened that day, though, in the bond market led me to believe that Thursday was likely going to be a bounce back. Because in the equities, because we didn't get that monolithic treasury sell-off that probably some people thought we were going to get, right? And the equities popped back yesterday. They did okay, and today they're just doing really, really well. They're again at an all-time high. I think we hit 4960 today on the S&P 500. I think we hit 15, just under 15.7 on the Nasdaq. So things are doing good. I mean, what's pulling the Nasdaq today, obviously, is Meta and Amazon. They're just absolutely crushing it. Meta announced a 50-cent per share dividend in earnings last night. Of course, they knocked the cover off the ball. They earned $5.33 a share on a $4.82 consensus estimate. Okay, so they just destroyed it. And they also announced a $50 billion buyback. Right, so you're talking about $50 billion on 1. On about what 1.5 trillion. So you're talking what about 3.5% of the company buyback. So they announced that and you just saw boom, the market just took off and or Meta just took off. And it's one of the strongest companies. I mean, it trades at a really good multiple against its growth rate. I mean, it's one of our biggest positions. Our clients are having a good day today. I'm having a good day today. It's Friday. I'm having lunch with my brother. It's gonna be a good. It's my son's birthday is tomorrow. It's gonna be a good. It's
Nice,
just
man.
it's one of those good days because, as you well know, and everyone who's listened to this this show knows, the market can give you some really gnarly days. So when you have some good days, especially on a Friday, you take your win.
Dude, couldn't possibly say, so you're couldn't possibly agree with that more. And then I ADD interrupted myself there. I've never interrupted myself. I just interrupted myself right there though. But so your son's I mean, you've always heard it's bad. Like, don't you can talk to yourself, just don't answer your own questions. Well, I just interrupted myself. Like, that is a new record for me. So your son's
Why
birthday
argue
is
with myself?
Groundhog Day. What's that?
Well, his birthday was yesterday, and
Okay.
his party is tomorrow. So,
Gotcha.
yeah, so tomorrow my day is going to be filled with psychotic 7-year-olds and balloons and donuts and cupcakes and everything like that. So basically it'll be a whole bunch of crazy 7 year olds and then an overgrown 7 year old.
Yeah.
With a receding hairline running around too.
Oh my gosh. For both of our careers, interest rates have really, we thought interest rates could only go one direction, right? And I mean, I thought that when they were at 3% and then they went to 2% and then they went to, so I mean, I was wrong for a little while, but for the most part, like they really only had one way to go for most of our career. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, wait, they could go either direction all of a sudden. It's like a fundamental paradigm shift almost for a lot of advisors because we've never had to think about that. This is something that in theory we've read about what to do in case rates were to go down, but we've never really had to worry about it happening. So how much does that, I don't know if there's a point to any of that, but tee off on that if there's anything to say there, but does it change your mindset a little bit to finally need all of the tools in your bag, really?
Last show we said, in theory, there's no difference between theory and practice, but in practice there is, Yogi Berra.
Right. So,
the study of interest rates moving like that, at that rate, to that level, versus what it actually did to the market when you were there, when I was there every single day managing through it, are two, they're not two different sports. They're two different species on two different planets and two different galaxies.
Okay. And we're talking about what happened versus what should have happened.
What happened versus, and doing it, actually being involved in it every single day with client dollars and watching the motion versus studying it in classes and just having an understanding of and looking at market history and seeing what took place then.
Yeah.
When you do it, it becomes real. And
here, let me interject like a real world example, okay? Like something during COVID happened that doesn't seem to me to make any sense under the sun. But then when it was explained to me later, I guess it did make sense. I did not understand how, at first, I did not understand how a barrel of oil could be priced negatively. How can I have to pay? How can, that's the weirdest thing. So like the people who bought it at that low of negative 50 or whatever it was, and then sold it later, like it was an infinite return. It was theoretically impossible to do that. You shouldn't be paid to take on an asset, right? But you did. And it makes sense because of the storage and things like that during COVID. But that's maybe the most extreme example that I can think of theoretical versus reality, or not always.
Yeah,
the same
it was April of 2020. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that well. April into May of 2020. Effectively, it always comes down to supply demand. And those were futures contracts that drove that price down. Okay. So there was so much oil being pumped. Because if you remember, again, not to get into politics, nothing. But that's the Trump years. Okay. Trump was pumping a tremendous amount of oil. Okay. Everybody was pumping a tremendous amount of oil trying to gain market share. Pandemic hit, everything shut down. So the need for oil, the need for transportation went way, way down. Okay. But we had this glut and we had all these machines, we had all these operations, we had all these, refineries pumping. Okay. So it simply said, well, I'm not going to take it. I'm not going to pay that much for the contract. I'm not going to pay that much for the contract. I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. You want it? No, I don't want it. You don't want it. I don't want it. Finally, they drove the price down and it blew right through zero. That's how much oil there was against demand for a small moment in time. So for a small moment in time, oil was a liability, not an asset. Isn't that crazy?
And that does not make any sense.
I got to watch it. I was actually grateful to go through it because I didn't think it could happen, but it did.
And that makes absolutely no sense until it happens. And then it's like, that makes sense.
Yep. You know? Crazy, right?
But that's what you're saying. Like in theory versus reality is two totally different things. And I think I'm fascinated by that almost in a way. Take what's given to you as opposed to trying to force your hand into something. I think as an investor, the market, all those little oscillations that you talk about that kind of kill the short-term traders, those are your opportunities. If you're arranging your chess pieces in the right way, every day there's an opportunity somewhere. Right. So how do you look at that from like a tactical or a strategic standpoint to try to position yourself so that you are reacting to the opportunities the market gives you, as opposed to trying to go make a bold bet, a strong arm your way into a successful outcome?
So again, yeah, you run the play, you to the coaches, to your to that sports analogy, you run the players you have and you run the plays that you have against the what the defense is providing, right? So if you have obviously if they're a zone defense team versus a man coverage or something like that, you're gonna run a different play. Okay. If we're going into a rising interest rate environment versus a falling interest rate environment, or a or labor is contracting versus expanding, those are different defenses, okay,
Right.
market-wise. So you have to take a flexible approach. Okay. And so, you know, we start with again, we always I'm a macro top-down fundamentalist to start. Okay. That's where we begin. Where is let's look at the S&P 500, let's look at the NASDAQ, whatever.
What would
What
be
does
so?
earnings growth look? What is the data saying about the earnings growth? And trust your data. Trust your data, trust your data, trust your data. Okay. Just like, you know, I told you we race cars. Okay. And we trust the data that we got after the run. We don't try to say, oh, that sensor is bad, that sensor is good. No, they're all good. Trust your data. Okay. Once you learn to trust your data, you stop with the confirmation bias, which is what we talked about several shows ago. So, as a top-down fund, you know, macro fundamentalist, and we will look at where the earnings are going. And, okay, S&P, NASDAQ, whatever. Okay, break apart the sectors. Okay, those are the earnings growth of the sector. So we have stronger earnings growth, less earnings growth in these sectors. Again, trust your data from these analysts. Okay. What companies are within those sectors are going to be providing the earnings growth. Okay. Now, what environment are we going into and why are they doing it? Okay. And then you go over to the sell side of your analytics and you say, okay, what are the analysts saying as far as buys, sells, price return? What are we looking for here? Okay. Are they seeing what I'm seeing? Okay. And understand that's what we have today. And then you start building these offenses out at given time intervals, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, 36 months. Okay. And there's positions you know you're going to be, you, there's positions you know you're going to hold for 5 years. Okay. Obviously, Apple's, Google's, Amazon's. Those guys, we've held Visas, Costco, we've held those for years. We probably will never sell them. We might adjust the weighting, but we will never completely, unless something happens, be completely out. But a lot of the satellite positions, maybe like we took a position in Grainger at about, I don't know, 680 or so, 690. It's up to what, nine? It's up to 965 today. Okay. So we're going to review that position soon. Okay. How much more is left in the tank? Okay. And
How
that's a,
much of
do I like Grainger? Is it a good company? Yes. But how much more, but has all the good news been priced in? And then back to your Sid Cottle, investment is a discipline of relative selection. At what time has that running back or that wide receiver given you four touchdowns? He's sucking wind. He needs a break, pull him off the field, put in a fresh set of shoes, right? The playing field will change whether we want it to or we don't, right?
Yeah.
Something is going to happen. We don't know what it's going to be. We're all going to get hit by the bus we don't see. Okay. Inflation could pop up again. We don't know, which would obviously delay future cuts that the Fed might be, that we might be in the middle of a rate cut cycle. That's stop is stopped dead in its tracks because inflation starts to tick back up, which would obviously change the mathematics on the discount rate, which would change how we would approach the equities. Okay. And it would also it would dramatically change where we position both quality and duration on the fixed income side. Okay. And you have to be able to say, okay, this is now changed. We are no, okay. Yes, we wanted to play the Lions, but now we're playing the 49ers. One's a good man coverage team, one's a good zone coverage team. We're going to run a different set of plays now. We're going to go to the field and this is a little different. We're going to go to the field with a different set of players, you know, maybe a little different set of players, actually. Okay. Because these things do a little different, you know, these things will do those things. If we think the, you know, maybe inflation's popping up, or we get the reverse, right? We actually get labor's really starting to cooling beyond what's comfortable. We start to get those structural deteriorations economically. Okay. And then we start to see earnings revisions really start to pull in. Okay. That's a whole different ballgame. That's when we go, you know, okay, we would definitely go into your longer duration, very, very, very high quality on your fixed income side. And we would go very, very high quality on your equity side, which would be your high value companies, right? I'm sorry, you're very low, you're very high value, you're low multiple companies that pay good dividends, your utes, your consumer staples, depending on, you know, maybe even a bit of real estate, okay? Probably mortgage-backed securities, those types, because rates would be coming down. That's where we would start looking at. And that gets back to, do you have confirmation bias or don't you? Now, it takes all of us a lot of data and time to process the data and then infer a conclusion that's actionable, right? Okay. It takes me probably longer than most, right? But when we make that actionable decision and we actually apply it, you know, it's okay, because we weren't trying to, again, like you said, force a round peg in a square hole, or back to the people we always love to pick on TV, where they get up there, no matter, you can take the day, the week, the month, the year, it doesn't matter. They say the same thing every single time and they never change their tune. It's the market's going down. The market's going down. You know, no matter what happens, the market's going to go down. No matter what happens, inflation still isn't whipped. No matter what happens, interest rates will never come down. No matter what happens, it will always be bad. Okay.
Yeah.
And or on the other side, there's a few, not as many, not nearly as many, hyper always bulls. Okay. And you don't want to be there either. You don't want to fall into the confirmation bias. Now, right now, it's real easy to be a perma bull, right? Right now, I'm feeling pretty holier than thou, because I've been super duper right for quite a while now. And
you gotta watch yourself. Remember, we talked about that on the last show too. That's like the kiss of death.
And that's why I'm like, okay, I'm about to screw this thing up big time. Okay.
Yeah.
What am I missing? Am I looking straight ahead right now? Should I be, you know, expanding my field of vision? Okay. So I am. Yeah. So, you know, that's why we sort of end of last year, beginning of this year, we started to look at the broadening of the market, and we think the equal weight is going to come back and do better. But we think we honestly think, based on the data that we have, we probably have a good, I don't know, I would say 20 to 24 months of good gains. Like I told you last time, I'm sure our year end goal for S&P is 5350, end of 2024, 5350, end of 2025 is 6,000 to 6,100.
And that would be about 10%, right at 10% year for the year?
This year, 12.5 to 13.
Okay.
End of 2026, you really want me to really screw this up, which I will be happy to do, probably 5,800 to 6,000. I think 2026 could be a flat year, or a very choppy year that ends up kind of like 2018 did, right? Just and then ended almost flat.
Yeah.
It gave everybody a lot of heartburn. But that's, you know, that's based off of cycle composites and demographics and all those other things. But interest rates going to where they were, I don't think that's ever going to happen in my lifetime. I don't think they're ever going to get that low again. Okay? I don't know that they might get a little higher than they are now at some point. Who knows? But that's based on the demographics, because we talked about this a few shows ago too. My silly generation, Gen Xers, were you know, I'm the youngest. I'm not the youngest. I'm 70. I was born in 76, so 1980. So the youngest Gen Xers are now turning 45 this year, right? So we're in the younger cohort of us. We are in our peak income and spending years, yes, but we're small, we're tiny. It's that small cohort that kind of, it's my half of Gen X, sort of that 74 to 1980, that really screwed everything up, because we are such a small group of people in comparison to the first half of Gen X. that we had this sort of this vacuum of demand. That's why I think that led to the low interest rate regime for many, many years. Now we don't have that. We have the millennials, you guys, right? 1981 and through basically 1996. There's so many of you. And I think this organic demand of homes, cars, you know, growing up kind of everything at your fingertips for the most part. It's really market positive. And again, we've got pretty high interest rates right now, very high interest rates, the highest interest rates ever in my lifetime, probably the highest interest rates we'll see in many, many years. And we still have a strong labor market. Okay. Which means as you look in its totality, what do we have? We have a lot of demand against a backdrop of expensive, restrictive economic policy. So we are going into, with this strong demand, we are going into a reduction of interest rate cycle. Listen, I'm not a PhD or anything like that. I'm no Benjamin Graham or Peter Lynch. But this kind of demand, this forecast earnings growth, going into a policy rate reduction cycle, now is where you want to be in the markets. It's a little, I mean, if we were talking in the next month or two or three, it might be a little overheated over the next month or two, sure. But if you're looking at this through a longer term scope, more than 12 months, this looks really good. This just, the fundamental core ingredients here look good. I mean, we are getting a good cow from a good ranch that's been fed good grass, maybe even got a beer once in a while, and he's been tendered and massaged. And boy, we got a good chef who cuts fresh vegetables. This is going to be a good dinner, I think. I really do, for the next
couple. Well, and it's, I mean, look, I'm going to try to be careful not to get overly zealous here, because what you're describing there sounds pretty euphoric for the markets. And if I've got to be honest, but one thing that I don't think I heard you mention there is that cow is also going to inherit a lot of capital over the next little bit.
$7 trillion.
Yeah. So when you look at that, I never really thought about it. I mean, that's a very, very, I think what you're saying, whether you're trying to say it or not, is a very bold, long-term economic thesis. I mean, this is like almost a long-term bull market. I mean, I could see this being like a 20-year like thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying this, I'm not trying to put you on the spot for that right now, but I mean, that sounds like more of a longer-term thing than just the 1 or 2 years.
This is 1983, 1982. That's what this feels like. Okay. And we're going to have some great years. We're going to have some bad years. I mean, are we in the early 80s or are we in the mid late 90s? Who knows?
Yeah.
I think we're in the early 80s. I think we're in a mix of the two. I think we're going to have, I think just because technology is so different and the data is so much more widely utilized than it was 40 years ago. There's so many more market participants that we have with a far greater access to far more granular data, the moves are bigger and faster. Okay. So don't get me wrong. I think in the long term, it's going to do really, really well. Okay. But there's going to be some choppy years. There's going to be some choppy months. But here's the thing is there's everyone is now in the sort of the tips, the Treasury inflation protected securities debate, right? When are people going to come off the sidelines and go into equities? Because we've got, you know, this $17 trillion sitting on the sidelines, right? So, you know, basically TIPS is your policy rate minus inflation. So as policy rate starts to come down, the TIPS yield starts to contract. So it's pretty wide right now. So we took a TIPS position in the fixed income side and then our fixed income portfolio, because we think that's going to contract and that side's going to rally. But there's a lot of, and honestly, I feel like they picked a number out of the air because it's big, fat and round, 5, right? 5%.
Surely that would be the criteria.
Right. Once we get below 5%, that's the threshold that needs to be overcome for that money to come off the sidelines. I think that's probably the number for the initial, like the spigot just cracked. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's not going to be a, you know, and again, this whole everything has to be binary. Well, at 5%, everyone's going into the equity markets. No, at 5%, that sideline money, the spigot is going to start to open slowly, and it's going to open slow. It's going to open, and then as we get closer to 3.5%, I think at 3.5%, it will be wide open, and then again, back to the good girlfriend, bad girlfriend. You go too far, the economy gets too cold, and they got to go far down the other way. Well, now it's going to go the other way, because now the equity money is going to start thinking, well, this economy is not so great, because they're having to cut rates further to keep this thing going. So we're going to get out of here. So again, now we're getting into that sweet spot of that 5%, sort of 3.5%, where I think the sideline money is really going to come in and live in the equities. Below that would maybe represent economic slowing, which would cause money to flow the other way, which could bring the multiple down.
Right. Confirmation bias kind of works like this. It's like the football equivalent of saying, okay, if I get up here and they are in closed field, one high safety, then I'm going to run this play. And then I get up there and I say, open field, two high safety. That's okay. I'm going to run the same play anyway, because I bet they're disguising it. I bet they do that to disguise this. I bet they're going to drop into this. I bet you figure out some reason to stick to your core strategy.
Right.
Right. That happens so much.
Right. But the data told you something different. The data was your eyes. What was on that field was information. It was data.
Yeah.
And the data said X, and you thought, no, why? You didn't trust your sensor, your eyes.
And why? Because you thought going into it that it was going to tell you Y, and it told you X, and you thought, that can't be right. I thought it was going to say Y. I bet the sensor's wrong.
Sure. But again, it's you know, statistically speaking, how many times are they trying to fake you out? Probably less than 50%. So if it's less than 50%, you would want to run the play that you see.
Right. Yeah. And I think that the other thing that I would like to talk more about as we go along here is the psychological impact of the election year, right? Because I think election years to me always seem like a headwind for the markets.
Yeah, so 2012, the market was up about 16%. In 2016, the market was up right about 10, right about 10, maybe 9.5, 10%.
Yeah, I think that's right, 16. I got that confused. 18 was the flat year.
18 was the midterm year, which was really, really choppy. We started the year hair on fire, and then it just chopped around the entire time. Then Jay Powell came out at the September meeting, 2018, and said he's going on autopilot with rate increases. So no matter what happened, we're on autopilot. And the market went, you are out of your mind, Jay Powell, and just tanked all the way into Christmas Eve. And then turned the other way. So here's the thing about, this is sort of farmer's almanac-y.
I love it.
Okay. We have to bifurcate the 4-year cycle and the 8-year cycle. So if you look at the 4-year cycle, the best period of time, if you take the 8.5 years of a 4-year presidential cycle, the worst is the first half of the midterm year. The first half of 2022. And dude, That was
the beginning of the third quarter, basically.
That was awful.
That would be like the beginning of the third quarter in our cycle, right? The first half of the third quarter.
The first half of the third year. The midterm year.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened. It sucked. It was awful. Okay. Followed by the best is the second half of the year that follows the midterm year, which was the second half of 2023, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you bust it up into half years on a 4-year cycle, that's what that looks like. So it kind of followed it to a T, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take an 8-year presidential cycle, and you chop the years up, okay? And you look at the incumbency, and it's specific to an incumbent, okay? Because we have that this time. The 8-year presidential cycle, the the election year with an incumbent running is the best year of the eight, because the president can pull on a lot of levers and put a lot of pressure in a lot of places to help the economy do well, even though if he's sort of swiping the credit card to do it. That makes sense.
Huh. Okay. I expect
this year to be good. I expect this year to be good. And there's another side of this. And again, I'm not taking any position here, but I can't think, no matter what side you're on, that anyone thinks that Donald Trump would be bad for the U.S. equity markets. I think it's pretty agreed upon that would be a good thing for the markets. He's business friendly, amongst many other things, but he will be good for the equity markets. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that's in any way a political or controversial statement.
So there is a thought now.
The guy's also blue, right?
Exactly. There is a thought now, and it's starting to be bantered around. And again, it's easy to dismiss if you're on the other side, because people want their confirmation bias. People want to like what they believe. The market, if you look at the polls now, he's doing good. And he's doing good specifically in the eight states he needs to do good in: Nevada, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Georgia, Arizona, North Carolina. He's doing good in those states. Right. He's ahead of Biden in all those polls. I want to say he's ahead of all eight of them or at least seven of them. Okay. And let's face it, it's those eight states that are going to elect the president. None of them. Right. You're North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
I'm in Nevada. We're in one of the eight. Both of us. Yeah. So those are the eight states we know.
Our votes matter.
Exactly. We know Wyoming and Idaho, and we know where that's going. Right.
Yeah.
We know where Illinois and California and New York are going. We know where those also. So those are not up for debate. It's the eight that are up for debate that he's leading in. What I'm saying is the market might now be pricing in a Donald Trump win, because the market is usually 9 months ahead of the game, and it's just now kind of getting there. The other thing is interest rates have been a little stickier than I would have thought they would have been, honestly, sort of in that middle part of the curve.
Yeah.
Which bodes to when he was elected in 2016. Do you remember the bond market destruction that happened late 2016, early 2017, when he got elected? All that money went right out of bonds because, like, this market, this economy is going to expand now. Forget these. I don't want to own these terrible bonds. Now, to be fair, then there was a really low interest rates.
Yeah.
And we knew we were going to have a growing economy. So that could happen, and that the market, I'm not saying that it is, but if that's what it's doing, I wouldn't be shocked, and I necessarily wouldn't be in disagreement with it either. Because I got to tell you, there's probably a better than 50% chance, if you look at the current polls and you look at the current way things are going, that he could win, and that will have an effect on the markets. Okay. This time, simply because we have such a difference in philosophy. And you know me, I always say, don't let your politics infect your investments, and you shouldn't. Okay. But Donald Trump sort of defies conventional political wisdom as it intersects the markets. That makes sense. Okay. Yeah. And here's the thing. Whatever side you're on, you need to be respectful of that fact, because it is a fact. Okay. If you don't, you're going to be positioned wrong, and I'm not saying you'll go down, you'll lose money, but you might lose opportunity.
I was actually talking to somebody this morning about Brady and Belichick. So I could say you could use either one of these. I don't care whichever one you want to give credit for it. Everybody except for Patriot fans hated Brady and Belichick. Okay. But they hated them because they won.
Right.
The same things that make you hate Donald Trump, every single thing that everybody who hates Donald Trump, the things that make him somebody you hate, makes him incredible for equities. So you can't possibly say that, I hate him, so the market's going to go down. That's like a natural paradox, right? Like, his very existence, that greedy nature that everybody hates, he's going to get paid in his tenure, right? He's going to get paid until we're all other stockholders. Like, I mean, that's a pretty commonsensical thing.
No, and here's the thing. People get, again, people get emotional and they make emotional decisions, whether it's...
You don't have to like it to profit from it.
Yeah. The thing is, whether it's the market causing the emotion, the market's going down, so I want to get out of here before I get completely slammed, right? Yeah. Or the market's going up, so I get excited and I want to join the party. Or yeah. I hate Donald Trump, so, you know, the world's going to come to an end, so I'm going to put all my money in cash. Somebody very, very near and dear to me did that, okay? I didn't know this. They did it inside of their retirement plan at work. This person does not like Donald Trump at all in any way. They're from a part of the country where nobody likes Donald Trump, okay? So pretty much there you go. I can't stand it. I went to Bonds to be safe. I'm like, so here it is. We had the discussion literally 4 years later.
Yeah.
And I was like, you've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars that just now. You and this person's younger than me. She was 42. Okay. That hundreds of thousands she lost 25 years represents millions.
Yeah.
It's millions of dollars to make emotional decisions that are mistakes. Okay. Doesn't matter that you like somebody you don't. Okay. And don't get me wrong. If Biden gets reelected, I don't think the markets are going to go down or get tanked or anything like that. Now, if the market gets way ahead of itself, thinking Donald Trump's going to come in and cut corporate taxes and bring a bigger number down to the earnings of the S&P 500, which is exactly what he did to the tune of $12 a share in 2017. Okay. Which is what caused the market to do what it did in 2017. Right. Then that could be a bit of a pullback, but it won't be. The economy is so strong organically now because of the demographics that exist within it and the companies that we have that effectively rule the world. We're going to be okay. Okay, we're going to be okay either way. Will we be okay? But like, how can I say this? One is going to Outback Steakhouse. One is going to Joe's Chop House, which is really, really, really good, right? As far as the equity is concerned. They're both good, but one's going to be really good.
I mean, it's in the context of that bigger cyclical bull market that we were kind of talking about before. No president's going to be able to buck the entire tailwind of the millennial generation coming into money, right? But that one may enhance it more than another. But I do think that, like you've said, like, I think right now it's pretty close to 50-50-ish. It's close enough to 50-50, I think, in terms of who gets elected, that the market's probably pretty close to evenly weighted each outcome. So I think there might still be some room for it to go up if Trump is, as Trump gets more and more likely to be elected, or you may just see it kind of slow down or not rally quite as much if it starts to shift towards Biden a little bit.
I always look at it from a historical perspective as far as what the analytics told us 4 years ago. Okay. And how does that equate today? Because it's just a numbers game, and I'm not biased one way or the other. But 4 years ago at this point in time, when there was a proposed Biden-Trump matchup, Biden was ahead 7-8 points in all the polls everywhere, okay, across the board. And as it got closer to the election, it got a little tighter, but he was always ahead. 3-2, 4-ish. And he won by 43,000 votes across those just a few states. Moreover, the demographics, if you compartmentalize the demographics, the younger generation, which overwhelmingly went for Biden, is no longer polling well. He's not nearly as well as he was. And he needs that to win the election. So there's a few small key areas in the polling data that would suggest the advantage as it sits today, and he could open his mouth and screw everything up between now and then. I believe a small advantage does go to Trump, and I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing personally or politically. It's just for the equities, though, I don't think that would be a net positive thing for the equity markets. And the market could be pricing it in.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, the the overarching most important fundamental theme is don't let your emotions and your opinions drive your decisions. Like, God gave us data for a reason, right?
Right. Yeah.
So
God gave me fact set because he loved me so much.
Oh, man, always a pleasure, dude. So as always, anything we say on the show is absolutely 100,000% not investment advice in any way, shape, or form, because neither Matt nor myself nor any of our RIAs or affiliates know anything about your financial situation. So therefore, it would be very stupid of us to tell you what to buy or sell. Matt?
Couldn't agree more. If you have any questions, please consult your own investment professional, or please feel free to reach out to us here at ARPG, 702-655-8300. You have a good weekend, my friend. I will talk with you soon.